Now, these other two species were sugar lime. Sugar lime?
Sugar lime.
Yes. And in paragraph 6.4 of your 1642 you say there's two options. Are we really restricted to those two options? Is there another alternative that might be to reflect what's actually there and likely to happen given the marine conceit of adjacent?
So in terms of the notified PDP zones,
well, yes, those are the notified zones, but is there another option?
Like a modified version of those zones?
Well, if you were Tanner asked to look at that and draft up, look, and put a zoning on it,
yeah.
What would you put on it?
I have sort of alluded to this, just saying that I think the area would benefit from a review of what's happening there and what council would like to see happen there, particularly in terms of the mix of uses and the attractive walkway, there's the completed marina, and I had thought some marine based commercial zones.
Right.
And
there
might
be,
you know, just for the area
to be
potential
well,
for.
There's something wrong with having an opinion.
Yeah.
That's why we're on board this planet.
Yeah. which is where I was sort of alluding to, maybe it needs
well,
to be reviewed.
Yeah, so your answer is that there's probably some more, I know it's a lake, but marine. Marine-related activity,
yeah.
Zoning, and what that may bring to the area.
Yeah.
In terms of your summary of Ms. Menzies Bank's evidence, which is on paragraph 6.2 of your report, given the existing uses in the conceited marina, isn't it likely that all those effects are going to happen in the evening?
Well, I think the conceited marina is the requirement to address the left turn of Sugar Lane. Yeah, so a lot of these do happen.
They're
going to
happen
now. Yeah.
Was a look taken at Sugar Lake? Because it seems like an aberration. It grew like toxic by the look of it. It certainly wouldn't be a good idea, I think, to zone it just because of what's there.
Yeah.
But my question to you would be, what might its best future be? If you were looking at the best future is to be.
I think as long as the traffic effects can be addressed, which would need to happen, is, you know, if you were to review the zone again now, traffic would be one of the key considerations. If you were looking at sort of getting the area organised and making it an attractive part of Queenstown, then I see that centering around the right now. Recreation area.
Mm.
Like
opportunity that's not available because of the scope. Yes. But it's kind of, you look at it and you say, oh.
I suppose the other question in relation to your comments on PREPA, Franklin Road has 25,000 vehicles a day anything. There's a reasonably heavy traffic on there. Isn't it likely that something is going to have to be done with that intersection? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Presumably, Christchurch will be leaving.
Christchurch.
Mm-hmm. There must be streets in Christchurch that carry 25,000 vehicles a day. And the people are expected to make right turns onto those streets without traffic lights.
No.
From marinas?
Probably not. No.
From large traffic generation.
Yeah.
Activities. Mm. I just wonder if the traffic is just full man and it seems that it's going to have to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Observation motels on Cathedral Road, for example.
Yeah, that's, I was just thinking that.
And there's the
secret
agent,
the
X-Road, Mirabelle. The sensible people will turn left to go around, make the right turn when they're on the road and go around the block.
Mm. Mm. The problem is there's no block.
There's no block to go around.
No, there's no.
Well, there is to Arthur's Point, but it's a very large block.
There's nothing along Carrington Road, obviously, in terms of preventing the right turn.
No. No, there's nothing to prevent right turns. No. There's also nothing to facilitate them.
Yeah.
Or enable them, actually. It's probably
yeah, but if you do that, there's nothing for them to do once turn right.
Yeah.
What about the use of U-turn lanes and most HRT rules? But that may not work either. It's only really worth to the multi lane.
Yeah.
Mm. We must be up to Ms. Kim Banks on the EZIA.
Yes, so that's the one that I have submission.
Yep, paragraph 4 of my submission. The EZIA submission seeks further residential intensification from relatively large areas within the OCD at Queensland Airport. I have not supported this submission on the basis of traffic and parking effects, and also that residential activities, i.e. SM, are not consistent with the land use management approach of PC35, which I support integrating into the BEV. This approach maintains the status quo and limits density within the NOS boundary and outer trial boundary to that which is currently enabled by the ODP. The NZIA also seek the rezoning of land around the existing Z Energy site in Frankton Marina. I do not support the Z Energy rezoning due to adverse effects. I'm talking about Z Energy again, but I think the same applies here. Due to adverse effects on character, residential amenity and dominance, and a lack of information regarding potential site contamination. The Frankton Marina is also considered in the evidence of Ms. Evans, and we both accept that the notified low density residential zone does not adequately reflect the mix of existing activities that make up the existing environment. However, I consider little benefit would be achieved by rezoning to medium density residential, taking into account these existing uses and traffic constraints which should allow.
Just before you read your last remark, thinking about Sugar Lane, if the intersection was suitably upgraded, wouldn't be in when the area starting to redevelop, there'd be nothing to actually stop or to constrain residential development in that area, would there?
Not just necessarily.
I mean, I can see it being quite compatible with the marina, for example.
Potentially, if you have a mixed use type of zoning there, the mixed use zoning we have is quite intensive for that area at the moment in the traffic.
Yeah, no, I'm not suggesting mixed use, the existing mixed use. Something to think about when you're doing that review.
Do you have any questions on that?
Ms. Evans has one final matter that she would like to address.
Right.
So just paragraph 5 of my summary. And the I just because I wish to make the following corrections to my evidence. In section 5 of my section 32A report. The summary tables for Smithers Williams, number 1, Giddens, 828, and Hanson, 840. I need to delete the words and infrastructure network from the summary row of the overall recommendations.
Accepting in part the following submissions. James Canning Musgrave, 396, rezoning of approximately 12,000 metre square of rural land below the owner of to rural residential, enabling 3 additional residential units. QLDC 719, rezoning of 1 lot in Franklin of 855 square metres from rural to low density residential, enabling 1 additional residential unit. And Wallish Consultants 425, rezoning of low density residential zone to medium density residential in local shopping centre and rural to low density residential at Calvin Heights, including extension of the urban growth boundary to align with the recommended low density residential zoning extent. Together, these rezonings could enable 26 additional residential units. For the Balmoral Drive medium density residential zone, I suggested that a building restriction area could be established adjacent to the Lake Lane Christian Camp. It's got a similar 1328. Together, these rezonings are estimated to provide an additional 63 residential units, with 60 being within the Queenstown Urban Growth Boundary, as recommended to be amended.
No, just a reminder to you from Banks about the extent of the building restriction area that you're proposing on Balmoral Drive.
I haven't specified that, and I'm just really suggesting that the submitter proposed it on the other side adjoining the existing dwellings. And that lane is steeper, and so I see that maybe they put that there because of topography anyway, and they didn't necessarily put housing in there. So the setback from the Lake and Christian Camp under the medium density zone would only be 1.5 metres in that boundary. So I'm suggesting that there could be one there to provide an increased setback, but it may also be something that could be worked out at subdivision stage where the road access alignment goes as well.
So the purpose of the setback would be to address the concern about noise?
Yeah, and I think, yeah, noise, and I think the submitter was just concerned about the quantity of people that would be on that land and be affected by, you know, just generally activities occurring on the site.
The Balmoral Drive property is above the Christian camp. The Christian camp?
There was quite a significant landscape sort of buffer there at the moment as well. So I didn't specifically consider that, but it might be that, but I'm not sure what property that's actually on, but it might be that the retention of that also provides some mitigation. That's visual effects from the joint use.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, obviously. I need to remember our site visit to that, and maybe you can. My question really is this with relation to sound, because that seems to be the big issue for the Christian camp. Is there enough space there? Has anybody expert in noise control actually looked at that? I'm a little bit sceptical that there's enough width there for that to be truly effective.
Yes.
No, I haven't got that specific commentary. Yeah, the submitter also just referred to people walking through the side and other types of effects. Not really too much, but to some extent they could happen through the no-fly zone anyway.
I thought it was a school. The council with five setbacks. I mean, if the Christian camp was a school.
I'm not sure. I have to look at the examples that we have. I'm not sure if there has been setbacks. Well, there is a meeting that's on off stage one, where there's problems in the special rooms.
I just think that that's probably a similar activity in terms of effects and what they have there.
So, if any decent effect with sound, you've got quite a big set. So schools, in my experience, typically they set back enough, really based on accession plans and the building guidelines rather than noise control.
And the playgrounds are with noise control.
And schools operate within specified times, whereas the camp goes all year round.
Yeah, that's true.
24/7.
That's a great advantage, of course, is sort of the night before. Typically when people are there, it's likely to be disturbed.
The other comment I have is that I think the submitter 425, the submitter is actually FS Mead Developments Limited. Monetary consultants lodged it, and for some reason in the summary it got put in as if they were the submitter. But when you read the submission itself, it's actually they're not the submitter. And that's.
Yeah, I think there's two separate submissions.
No, even the Bonnet one has actually never seen submit. It's on the form, but not on the computer register. Yes, it'd just be useful if that was directed in the on the database and on the appendix too, so when the decisions are issued, they go to the right people.
Yes.
I'll now ask Ms. Kimbanks to read paragraphs 11 and 12 of the summary of three submissions, 3386 and 476.
With respect to submissions, I have not recommended attending around Lake Johnson and Nantucket Beach. A number of submitters seek rezoning rural land at Tuck Beach and around Lake Johnson. Some submissions made in this location were transferred to Herring Stream Board due to being subject to the outcomes of the Rockatipu Basin Land Use Study, and their submissions are not addressed within my Section 42A report. Submissions 338, 396 and 476, although within the area of the Rockatipu Basin Land Use Study, remain subject to this hearing stream, either because the submitter chose to be heard in this hearing stream, or in the case of 338, because the panel directed that it remain heard in the stream today. Should I keep reading this?
Excuse me, just submission 338. Must be next first, and then the other two experts.
Yes.
The most intensive rezoning in this area is the submission of the Middleton Family Trust, who seek the rezoning of land north of Lake Johnson to a combination of low-density residential and rural residential. I have rejected this submission on the basis that the rezoning would result in an inappropriate landscape, amenity and traffic effects. In particular, Council's landscape evidence suggests that the proposed low-density residential zoning is within the backdrop of high-value views within the basin and would result in significant adverse effects on the character and quality of the landscape. I just wanted to suggest rebuttal evidence and find capacity within my strategic summary. In relation to 8.17 of this evidence, Mr. Geddes' comments that little plan and able capacity has been provided to the market in the last 10 years, and it's relevant to also consider that if this land were rezoned, there's no certainty of it being brought to the market.
Now stop to
Well, Permission 338 requests extensive urban development over the northern face of the landform of the Ferry Hill and Lake Thompson landform, not if you're talking about the southern side of. I consider that this development would have a very significant adverse effect on the quality of the ONL and on the visual amenity enjoyed from a large area of the Wakatipu Basin. The submission requests that the northern fringe of this area adjacent to the Shotover River that's outside the ONL be rezoned rural residential. I consider that some development could be contained within this area, but consider that rural lifestyle zone would be more appropriate.
Ms. Wendy Banks from paragraph 15 of her summary.
The management in chief enforces submission based on a significant number of lots that's in the order of 1,156 low density residential lots and 30 rural residential lots. I note that there was no evidence or technical analysis provided in the submission to support that the access on the Hawthorne Drive to the Highway 6 roundabout can accommodate this, as well as consideration for other developments in the area. Through submitted evidence, the total relief sought has been reduced to a total of 1,150 lots. Although the revised lot numbers would generate less traffic, the difference is marginal, being 3% less than the estimated traffic in our evidence in chief. Mr. Barrett's evidence for the submitter agrees that there was minimum information related to traffic effects with regards to the proposed rezoning. Further, he recommends that a transfer assessment be undertaken to determine the traffic effects of the development. Oasis and the Basin Foundation opposes the Middleton Family Trust submission. Mr. Carr, on behalf of Oasis and the Basin Foundation, supports the rejection of the rezoning sought. However, suggests that the use of Tucker Beach Road access to a site instead of using a new lane on the State Highway 6 Hawthorne Drive roundabout. According to Mr. Carr, the formation of a new lane of the roundabout will be met with topographical challenges and considers that there will be sufficient capacity once NZ Transport Agency upgrades the Tucker Beach Road in section of State Highway 6. I continue to oppose the rezoning based on the lack of evidence that has been provided for the traffic effects. In addition, I do not agree with Mr. Carr's suggestion of having only one access route to the site.
Mm.
I don't have any specific questions at the moment. I understand very well what's being said, I think. Maybe just on the issue of the single effort, Mr. Carson is talking about creating all the 1,500 lots and cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
So what can go wrong? I mean,
I guess that for that number of lots, you ideally want to access this if one became the block or any kind of and also to distribute the traffic.
So it's only one access at the moment in that area, is it?
No, he suggests that that Tucker Beach Road would be the primary access for that development. Because he suggests that the cork leg on the roundabout would be the topographical constraints on that.
That wouldn't be achievable, so you're coming in from the other region.
Yeah.
If that route became available, then unavailable for reasons of a crash or a landslip or something, then the road's cut off.
Yeah.
When you say Mr. Barton's now recommending that a transport system would be undertaken, where does that leave this
application? I think he agrees with them that there's a lack of traffic evidence and that further information is required, assessment is required.
Well, where are you proposing that we receive that? Sorry, it's not really fair to ask you then.
You can ask them that when you appeal it.
So obviously you've got to put an evidence, further evidence that he doesn't use. Yes. No.
Dwelling capacity estimates can be achieved without the inclusion of this land.
That's right.
It's not material to the provision of choice, any more than it is to the choice to the provision of quantity or affordable housing.
And I think the point that Mr. Osborne raised about when he was questioned about overzoning residential dwellings rather than here.
It's just on that. Do you think, I understand where you're coming from in terms of pure numbers, and on the assumption that all those numbers are going to be made available. Are you at all concerned that those numbers are actually too much concentrated in one or two hands? And the potential impact of somebody who holds a lot of that land bank doesn't go ahead?
That is the case, but in terms of what we've needed to do to give effect to the NDS and providing enough capacity and providing enough choice, the plan does achieve that, and it can't specifically address the issue of land banking. We can do what the NDS suggests, is that provide enough capacity and provide an over supply of this 20%. And provide the choices.
Well, what you could do if you were seriously concerned about land being held back would be to exceed the 20% and make them put something above. Have you considered that? Do you consider that necessary?
That's one of the mechanisms we need to look at once we get to the housing and business assessment. So that
would be premature
to be looked at in more detail.
So you will be looking at that, won't you? Through the NPC.
Yeah, that's one of the things, one of the matters that we're talking
about. I mean, I don't know, they empty, this is saying at least 20% could go well beyond that if you thought there were reasons.
It could. I think we have, I haven't worked out the exact number, but and adding the 20% on top of demand, and as well as adding the 20%, as Mr. Osborne has, and getting to feasible to realisable, we already have more than 20%. And the data was the demand data, sorry, the capacity data is for the demand data is for the Queenstown Board, and the capacity data is for the Queenstown Metro Growth Boundary, so we're providing more than enough.
The reason I'm pursuing this is because of the number of submissions suggesting we need a bigger buffer.
Mr. Chair, can I just comment on that? The evidence before you is that the council already is providing a bigger buffer than the MPs requires.
Just thinking about that very soon. You obviously quite satisfied. There is just that thought that into a lot of it is the available capacity is concentrated in a very few hands.
Yes, and we're required to monitor over time the release of that land, so that will become apparent as we're monitoring building consents over time and whether those consents are meeting the demand and the capacity that we need to.
So you'd prefer that we end? I mean, we have the opportunity to do something precipitate as commissioners now on the zoning. You certainly prefer that we didn't, and you just keep monitoring it.
Yes, based on the evidence that we
have. Thank you. Dr. Reed, is there any dispute on this land about the location of the aerial boundary?
Which land are we talking about? Oh, the northern side of Berry Hill. Yes, there was a submission.
Well, I mean in the evidence. I don't mean the submissions.
Oh, in the evidence. In my evidence. I'm confused.
If we take the land north of Lake Johnson.
Yes.
Which at the moment is within an hour now.
Yes.
Was there any landscape evidence provided by the submitter disputing where the final line is?
There was no landscape evidence submitted.
That was my thought. No, that's my recollection. Yes, I'm just checking that. So, for all intents and purposes, it is within an hour now.
Yes. Predominantly, not entirely.
Yes, the bit on those lower terraces drops down to the shot over. Different, yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay, thank you. We can move on from there.
Ms. Kinbanks turns to paragraph 14 of her summary, noting that submission 396 has already been addressed by Ms. Banks.
Other submitters in this area sought rural to rural residential rezonings. We've accepted a small extension to the rural residential zone below the arm now. Proposed by James Kenning Musgrave, however, I rejected the rezoning of Keith Hindle and Dale Wright, as I consider the rural zone to be most appropriate in managing the effects of development on the landscape of Ferry Hill. I do not support the submitters requested bespoke density rule of 3,000 metres squared to allow further subdivision of this land, which would not meet the minimum lot size for the rural residential zone sought.
Do you have any questions on the motion?
No.
I do. I'm just looking at your paragraph 15.7 in your Secretary of Trade report. I'm just not sure that I understand the logic about the land is subdivided and largely developed in a density similar to rural residential. Why do you oppose rural residential zoning?
The reason that I've opposed it there is because none of those lots are large enough to subdivide under rural residential zoning and to allow subdivision to occur as a result of the density being reduced.
So you're opposed to the reduction in density. Would you be opposed to it being rezoned rural residential with the 4,000 square metre minimum site size?
Well, the other concern is that they could amalgamate those lots and create quite a cluster of density on the corner, which appears to be quite intentional as to why the land has a lower density.
Is that a permitted activity?
Is what it's permitted.
Well, it's certainly permitted to amalgamate lots, but then to put a cluster of housing in. Presumably, it still have to be the 4,000 square metre minimum.
Yes. So the rural residential doesn't, you don't have to identify building platforms. And it still needs to meet the minimum lot size. Potentially, they can seek to meet that and have different activity status for a small subdivision, but when I say cluster, I suppose I mean that from the location of that land, it would appear if you squeezed in more housing in that area, it would appear too much for that particular location.
Thank you.
I'd now like to ask Ms. Kim Banks to read paragraph 15 of her summary, which is the last paragraph, and I suppose that we will turn to Dr. Reed to deal with the remaining submissions in her summary, which is the minutes you will have. Ms. Kim Banks.
So, paragraph 15 of my summary. Summarises land affected by hazards. I did not support some submissions on the basis of outstanding issues in relation to natural hazards. These are submitted 48, Kuravichi, 661, Linz, 533, Winton Partners, 429, FSB Developments Company, and 434, B Grant. In my view, the level of information provided by the submitter is insufficient to quantify the level of risk for the particular hazards previously identified on the land where the rezoning is sought. There is also insufficient information to demonstrate that the intensity of development that could be enabled on the site via rezoning can be achieved in light of the hazard. Also, to what extent mitigation may be required and where this might be located. Without suitable information being provided, proposals seeking more intensive urban zones are, in my view, contrary to the purpose of the Act and are more appropriate to be considered under the rural zone.
Dr. Reed, if you could please take us through paragraphs 22 and 25 through 28.
23, submission 5012, that submission is 2.2. Request that the urban growth boundary be relocated so as to incorporate the floor of the Cone River Valley to the east of Peninsula Hill, extending from the Dax Point zone in the south to the vicinity of the Kalarau River in the north. They don't propose any rezoning of this land at this stage, simply that it be included in the within the urban growth boundary. I support this submission considering that this area has the ability to absorb urban development without adverse effects on the adjacent outstanding natural landscape. With regard to submissions 533 and 661, these relate to an area of land between State Highway 6 and Peninsula Road, which is adjacent to high-density residential zone land to the west. I consider that high-density residential zoning would be appropriate on this land, as the impacts of such development in this location would have only an insignificant effect on the wider ONL and its vicinity. Submission 429 requests an area currently zoned low-density residential be rezoned to high-density residential. I consider that this would not adversely affect the ONL either. Submission 48 relates to a small site upslope of the land subject to submissions 533 and 661 that requests low-density residential zoning over the site. I consider that this could be appropriate if the land downslope is rezoned, as it would then form part of an edge of the urban development. Submission 425 requests, among other things, the alteration of the location of the boundary of the low density residential zone on Peninsula Hill. I partially support this as an opportunity to make the zone boundary more coherent from a landscape perspective.
My thing is in a different order, so I'm pretty trying to find it as well.
Then I'll ask Mr. Kimbeck a general question about the level of information you need on natural hazards to satisfy you about the risk that would be involved prior to zoning. What exactly would you request of the geotechnical engineer in order to have the proper study done?
The geotechnical assessments that have been provided essentially concluded by saying that further investigations are needed, and they don't provide certainty that a level of intensity of zoning can occur on those sites. And to be able to determine what scale of development could occur, it probably needs detailed ground truthing, and in the case of some of them, taking soil samples and analysing those, which are probably quite difficult to do in terms of this at this stage of the process for a submitter. So I suppose it's understandable that we don't have that. But my concern is that we can't confidently come up with rules to ensure that if there is needed to be mitigation on the site, for example, whether that would extend off the site of the rezoning, and whether it would need to be provided off site, and to what extent we can allow for that within the rules. And so from that perspective, the rural zoning is more the assessment that we can do, and the consent framework is more comprehensive in that respect.
When you I'll put another one, would you accept a walkover by a geotechnical engineer and a desktop analysis of the risk assessment, but based on obviously comparison with adjoining properties and other known information? Is that adequate in order to make a call on zoning?
If those assessments provided me with certainty and their conclusions, I didn't get that impression from listeners.
How do you get certainty about
the
risk? It's natural hazards.
Yeah, do you get certainty of natural hazards? Queensdale or in Falk County Road?
Well, for the rezonings that I've considered, the hazard is to do with landslide and rockfall, and for those submissions, I would need information to quantify where the rockfall source is and where the mitigation would need to be and how that would affect the zoning that was established.
Aren't those two hazards dependent on earthquakes?
To some extent, but they could be due to other extreme weather events.
Or could be triggered by the rain.
Yes, that's as infrequent in this district as earthquakes. Probably much less frequent than earthquakes.
It becomes more frequent after the earthquake.
So, may I just finish on one point then? Where is the division between the information that you require to consider a resource consent for a subdivision development and the kind of information you require to assess risk when you're doing zoning issues? I put another way, why do you need rules in the plan about something that you can manage in a resource consent?
You mean if the land is rezoned, there'd still be a rule in the plan to enable that system?
Well, that's what you said in the previous answer.
There's a section in the Act.
You said that too.
Section 106.
Section 106 too.
It just comes back to the mitigation location, I think. And yes, there can be rules in the plan in their areas to address hazards, but if the submitter was proposing development on the land and the, for example, the rockfall hazard is upslope and there needs to be a retaining wall somewhere, or one of the submitter's evidence suggests that there's a depression in the land which needs to be kept clear, they are the types of things that I can't necessarily provide for an under a rezoning, but that can be assessed at a site specific detailed level through a consent.
Can I put it to you another way?
Yes.
Section 9 has the presumption that people can do whatever they like with their land, subject to the rules in the plan, doesn't it? And to put the rules in the plan, we have to go through the various methods set out based on the colonial vineyards. It seems to me that your answers are the reverse. Mm-hmm. You're saying that the submitter has to show that the colonial vineyards things are satisfied to take the rules out of the plan. Is that what you're doing?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, the council, to put a rule on the plan, it has to be able to justify the reasons for it, and it has to be based on various things. If you make a zoning, which is, if you're seeking a zoning that is more liberal than that is notified, the council has to justify the less liberal zoning rather than the submitter justifying the more liberal zoning, don't they?
Yes. Yeah.
So, but I understood your answers to be along the lines of, well, the submitter has to prove to me that there are no natural hazards, or that the natural hazards can be adequately dealt with. And that seems inconsistent to me with the scheme of the Act.
Yes, I think we, in terms of the way I assess these, is that the rural zone is the most appropriate, and I am defining that in terms of the statutory requirements. And the reason for that is because the evidence for the more liberal zoning doesn't demonstrate to me that the intensive zoning can be eliminated from that land. So that
site and the site next to it, adjoining the area of low density residential. And some of that low density residential area is another sector to be high density residential. Did the council undertake it? Hazards analysis of the low density residential area before zoning it?
I'm not aware of whether that was done or not, but I think the difference in this case is the configuration of the land at this point in time, and then the Kurichi sites are smaller lots, and to rezone them and suggest that you can get more on those smaller lots and as well as achieving mitigation at the same time is made possibly not practical, whereas when that low density zone comes to be developed, a plan of subdivision can look at that more thoroughly.
Seems to me the council's actually applying two different standards. That when it was notified, they didn't, there's no apparent indication that the natural hazards were considered. But now that someone next door wants to have the same zoning, the natural hazards is a problem. That seems inconsistent to me.
I think when you have larger land areas,
but if we take the Kurichi site and it was rezoned low density residential and they applied for a subdivision consent, section 106 requires that the natural hazards be considered anyway. And the new act has as a matter of national importance that consider significant risk of common exactly what natural hazards. So it may be that they can't get a subdivision or at a low density residential limit. But that is no different than what would occur on the site next door and say low density residential, is it?
No, but I'm suggesting that the site next door is a larger site which development could be configured around depending on areas of high, low risk.
Well, yes, they might get more lots. Kurichi may only get one new lot. They may not get any new lots. So I don't think it's our job to second guess the development outcome, is it?
No, but I also don't think it's appropriate to rezone something within and suggest that a type of density could be achieved on that land and it might not be able to be.
Well, the council's already done that all the way back to Balmoral Place and further out. Then there may well be land stuff has it on all of the Commissioner Hill, all we know. So it's made that suggestion already. Why should we treat the neighbour differently? Well, think of it another way. What's the practical difference? If it's zoned rural, it's still subdivided. Probably subdivided to smaller sites, because there's no minimum lot size. So, with the potential to have a greater density of development on the rural land, given that it's adjacent to low density residential.
You could potentially, but that would rely on having those detailed assessments to identify where housing cap could and couldn't go on the site. And yeah, I think it just, from my point of view, it just comes back to that it wouldn't be appropriate for council to suggest land that's subject to hazards could be developed for that intensity.
Can you able to tell me which land and district is not subject to hazards? Is it?
As I've mentioned in checklist submissions I'm looking at, it's a landslide and rock fall hazard, and yes, they can be caused by earthquakes, but they can also be caused by land instability and other things.
Okay. I should add, that would assist the panel if you provided the hazard maps to us so that we could see what they are.
Yeah.
I know where to find them on the GIS system, but my fellow commissioners don't.
So we may have included them in the bundle, but
have we?
It might just be the other copies of one, so I will follow up on it.
Okay, thanks. The Lynn's land. My understanding is natural hazard on that land is a clearly defined flow path.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, what was that?
Flow path. Is that a correct understanding?
That's also to do with the slight rockfall hazard, and they've identified an area within the site where they expect that if any rockfall was to occur, that it would potentially locate in the area.
Is it your view that you could possibly get one or two or three or four houses on that piece of land? Or even more perhaps, and avoid those issues?
Possibly. Again, I didn't get that confidence from the geotechnical events.
That are covered in Ms. Banks' evidence, and she did
Paragraph 55 of Reed's summary.
Well, I think it does, Mr. Chair.
I think we're very lucky, actually.
Yes. We did take up on your offer to ask Mr. Devlin to be here at 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Yes.
And that leaves us with Group 1C, which is Mr. Devlin's submissions, and then the, Ms. Jones's evidence on the expert witness, which I think we'll get through tomorrow.
Yes, there are lots of submissions, but there's not a lot. Ask questions.
Thank you.